For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. US President Donald Trump has delivered a blistering attack on his critics during a campaign-style rally in Phoenix, Arizona. The wide-ranging speech covered everything from the US media to the NAFTA trade deal. Giles Gibson reports from Washington.
This was Donald Trump back in familiar territory, railing against his critics to his gathered supporters.
If you want to discover the source of the division in our country, look no further than the fake news and the crooked media.
The president, deeply irritated by the media's portrayal of his comments after recent violence in Charlottesville. And there was some policy too, with Mr. Trump vowing to close the US government if necessary to build a wall between the US and Mexico. He also said he thinks the US will probably terminate the NAFTA trade deal despite ongoing renegotiation talks. Giles Gibson, Washington.
U.S. officials say the country's Navy will dismiss Commander of the 7th Fleet Vice Admiral Joseph Aucoin after several collisions in Asia involving U.S. warships. 10 sailors went missing after the USS John S. McCain collided with a tanker off Singapore on Monday. Remains off the Danish coast have been identified as missing Swedish journalist Kim Wall. With the suspect being a submarine inventor, her murder and the mystery surrounding it is getting international attention, as Kevin Ozebeck reports.
Well, DNA testing confirms remains found earlier this week are that of journalist Kim Wall. Inventor Peter Madsen continues to face the charge of negligent manslaughter. Danish police believe 2 weeks ago, Madsen deliberately sunk a submarine he invented shortly after Wall boarded it. The freelance journalist, who's previously reported for the New York Times and The Guardian, was doing a profile on Madsen and his submarine. According to police, Madsen first told them he safely dropped Wall back off on dry land, but later changed the story to he buried her at sea after there was an accident. But based on the remains found, foul play looks likely. Madsen's attorney says her client will plead not guilty.
Britain's Prince Harry's criticized photographers he says took pictures of his mother dying in a car crash in Paris, which killed her 20 years ago. He's been giving a series of interviews to mark the anniversary of the death of Princess Diana on the 31st of August 1997. Prince Harry says he was very glad he joined the funeral cortege for his mother in front of vast crowds in London, but he has strong words for the paparazzi photographers who followed Diana's car into a tunnel in Paris.
The people that chased her through into the tunnel were the same people that were taking photographs of her while she was still dying on the back seat of the car. And William and I know that. We've been told that numerous times by people that know that was the case.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Ollie Barrett. I must have asked Feature Story News 7,000 times to watch their levels, their audio levels, as opposed to their own levels. I'm getting nowhere with them. I might have to pay them a visit. Hope you're well this Wednesday. It's the 23rd of August 2017. It's Wednesday's programme. I'm Richie Allen. Hope you've had a good day. Welcome to your Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, richieallen.co.uk, and TuneIn Radio as well. Stephanie Ann Doyle joins the program this hour. Now, she posted a very warm and thought-provoking response to an article published by us, or shared by us, I should say, about 10 days ago. Stephanie is genetic. She's a genetic female with the medical diagnosis of gender dysmorphia. She's felt male all her life. She does support the scientific consensus that gender dysphoria or dysmorphia is a mental illness, and very much, Stephanie, I should say, is very much against the obvious indoctrination of children into questioning their gender. I spoke with her earlier on. Terrific lady. Joins the programme this hour, don't miss it. And Dr. Rainer Kurtz returns to the programme in the second hour. Been a long time since he was on. A hugely experienced chartered psychologist, 25 years of psychometric research and development experience. He spent over 4 years working with survivors of ritual abuse, and we'll talk about forthcoming workshops with Sandra Fecht. Rainer is working with the brilliant Canadian psychotherapist Sandra Fecht, who's been on this programme many times. This is hugely interesting, of course, and we'll talk about that in the second hour. We are live today, by the way. Pre-recorded programme yesterday. That's a rare thing. We won't do too many of those. We are live, so tweet me with your opinions. It's at Richie Allen Show. If there's something you'd like me to put to Stephanie Ann Doyle this hour, just let me know via Twitter. If there's a question you'd like me to put to her, and I will do that. So I would ordinarily give you a good rundown of the news right now, but I want to spend more time with Stephanie this hour. So I'm not going to give you the headlines. You heard the headlines from FSN there anyway. That's if they didn't blow the eardrums out of you. But I am a narky old bastard sometimes. Found this pretty funny. Hillary Clinton has been talking about how Donald Trump made her skin crawl when they were debating in the presidential debates, or in the election debates, presidential debates last year. She's been reading an excerpt from her forthcoming memoir about the election. Clinton saying that Trump made her skin crawl. I'm not going to say anything. Have a listen to what she was saying. Have a listen.
This is not okay, I thought. It was the second presidential debate, and Donald Trump was looming behind me. 2 days before, the world heard him brag about groping women. Now we were on a small stage, and no matter where I walked, he followed me closely, staring at me, making faces. It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. It was one of those moments where you wish you could hit pause and ask everyone watching, well, what would you do? Do you stay calm, keep smiling, and carry on as if he weren't repeatedly invading your space? Or do you turn, look him in the eye, and say loudly and clearly, back up, you creep. Get away from me. I know you love to intimidate women, but you can't intimidate me, so back up. I chose option A. I kept my cool.
Yeah, you've heard enough of that. Do you know, in lieu of that, I had a look today at some YouTube videos of some of the debates. And Clinton now spoke at length about Trump yesterday and who I believe Trump is. So I don't have to keep, you know, saying what I think about Trump. But at no time could Clinton have claimed that she could feel Trump breathing down her neck. He never got that close to her at all. And I could probably fill 6, 12, 16, 24 shows, that'd be 48 hours of broadcasting, talking about the crimes of Hillary Clinton and her husband, Bill Clinton. So I'm not going to get into that. I thought you'd find it interesting. Lot in the news this afternoon and this evening about the new UK government paper about the future of justice in this country with respect to the European Court of Justice. We will get into that in the coming weeks when Parliament returns officially. We'll talk more about that as these things develop. Had an interesting, I put an interesting post, tongue-in-cheek but semi-serious, on Facebook about cyclists as well. You might be aware, you might not be aware. There's an interesting case here in the UK where a woman was knocked down by a cyclist in London and died. The cyclist has been found guilty of wanton and furious driving, a guy called Charlie Alliston, young man. The verdict came in this afternoon. I've noticed increasingly over the last couple of years, and I've been lucky enough to visit certain cities around Europe, and I've seen it there as well. Increasingly, cyclists are becoming very militant people, very angry people, very aggressive people, and pretty careless about the rights of and the personal space of other road users. And I'm wondering what's going on with that. We might get into that on a future programme as well. It's now exactly 9:30 past the hour. There's so much we could have gotten into today, but I really do want to spend time this hour with Stephanie Ann Doyle. And I know you're going to be really interested to meet Stephanie. She joins us live in a couple of minutes' time. Before that, though, we're going to take a very quick ad break. Remember, if there's anything you want to say about transgender men and women, about personal space, about same-sex bathrooms, about free speech, about safe spaces at university, about children learning about gender fluidity, if there's anything you'd like to say, you'd like me to put to Stephanie, just tweet it. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, and I will put it to her in the course of the next 40 minutes or thereabouts. Back in a couple of minutes' time.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with orgone energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We're offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's vibration.com/Richie. Thank you.
Welcome back to the programme. 12 and a half minutes past the hour. Let's have a bit of Bob Dylan on the show today. Why not? A little bit of Bob Dylan kicking things off. Hope you're well this Wednesday. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidike.com, richieallen.co.uk.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you, people call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall, you thought they were all kidding you. You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Now you don't talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging. You know you only used to get juiced in it. Nobody's ever taught you how to live out on the street, and now you're gonna have to get used to it.
works for you.
Bob Dylan on the Richie Allen Show, 16 minutes past the hour for Wednesday, the 23rd of August 2017. Real lot of interest in our first guest, and I'm glad she got in touch with the programme. I shared an article from the Daily Mail online a couple of weeks back about Nicky and Louise Draven, who are raising their four-year-old son Star as a person rather than as a boy, saying that they want him to decide his gender when he is older, when he's old enough to understand gender. Now, Nicky and Louise Draven, in fact, gave an interview to Jackie Devoy. Now, Jackie used to be a producer on my television show in London. And Jackie's a brilliant journalist. And Jackie tells me that Nicky and Louise were very, very nice people, really nice people, and very gentle people, very loving people. They came across that way, in fact, in the television interviews they did. But there's been a big backlash towards them having gone public with this. I, of course, I'm not going to hide and say anything other than that which I've said before. I don't like the idea of doing what they are doing. And I shared this article that Jackie wrote. And Stephanie Ann Doyle got in touch with us. Now, Stephanie's a stand-up comic and wrote a brilliant response to the article, in which she said that she's a genetic female with the diagnosis of gender dysmorphia. Stephanie has felt male all her life, and she humorously, I think anyway, talked about a couple of incidents when she was very young. She did say in the message that she is vehemently against the obvious indoctrination of children into questioning their gender, and she's horrified that extremist trans groups are pushing for non-scientific trans education in schools, and also sickened that parents are blocking puberty and causing sterilisation in male children too young to make these life-altering choices. She went on to say to Stephanie that she knows many trans people who feel as she does. Children are being exploited for political ideologies that have infiltrated the LGBT community. Trans people such as myself, who bring up sensitive subjects like detransitioning, are attacked by the regressive left in the LGBT world. Delighted that Stephanie Ann Doyle has agreed to come on the programme. We're connected on Facebook. Stephanie, thanks for doing it. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. It's a gorgeous day in Maine today.
Ah, Maine, Stephanie, eh? I was in Boston briefly many, many moons ago. I didn't go further north. I should have done. Amazing part of the world, I'm guessing.
It's beautiful, beautiful.
Thanks for getting in touch. Let's talk, I suppose, about the article that we shared. And my mate Jackie interviewed Nicky and Louise. They went on TV. I wouldn't have advised them to go on TV because they've probably been shocked at the reaction that they've gotten since then. They look upon Star as a person, and they want to let him make up his own mind when he gets older. What do you think about that?
I think that their heart is in the right place. And I guarantee you that there are people in the trans community who are telling them that they're doing the right thing. And what was really important for me as a little trans guy is that I was asserting my identity. I was asserting being male. And I think it's really frightening to me that we're taking this even a step further. And not only are we... I mean, we've gotten to a point where there's an infant in Canada who has a mother who is a trans-identified male who petitioned the government there to have a genderless birth certificate. He was able to get the child's gender unspecified on the state health ID card. But we have a 9-month-old infant, Richie, that doesn't even know who he is. Kids are not a social experiment. That boy needs to know who he is. He needs to know what male and female is. How can a toddler or a young child choose their gender?
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, kids can have an emotional meltdown choosing a snack.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. And we're asking kids that don't even know how to experience the world, who are just literally like an open vessel of energy, to just blindly grope around and figure out who they are. And there's such a welcoming environment now. There's so much education. There's doctors in place. There's major hospitals have gender programs for transgendered children. If your child is truly transgendered, I will tell you, they will let you know, because we are adamant about our gender identity. And I want to take this as an opportunity to brag about my incredible family in Michigan. I was a kid in the 1970s. I grew up in a very small rural farming community. And of course, I don't remember this because I was too young, but I was asserting that I was a boy as soon as I could talk. And I wanted access to everything that a boy had. I wanted a boy haircut. I wanted boy clothes, boy toys. I wanted to do everything that boys could do. And my mother, you know, to her credit, was as accommodating as she could be, because we are talking about the 1970s. And, you know, there are some things that back then just wouldn't have been acceptable. I was desperate to get into the Boy Scouts, but it just would have been caused too much of an uproar. So she tried to sneak me into the Brownies, which is kind of the precursor to Girl Scouts. Had the most miserable day of my life. The boys were all outside climbing trees and building things and learning how to use a pocket knife. And I was stuck inside making mats out of newspaper and cooking donuts. And, you know, I complained all day that the poor brownie leader was probably glad that I didn't come back. But that was my first and last day at the Brownies.
Drove you mad.
I couldn't stand it.
At any stage, I mean, your mom must be wonderful. At any stage, did anybody decide to send you to see somebody or to speak to anybody, Stephanie?
No, and this is a great question, because I honestly believe that before being transgendered got politicized, that people had a much more, I'd say, elegant way of dealing with it. If you were a transgender boy, then you most likely just got called a tomboy. People knew what a tomboy was, and they dealt with it in that way. Unfortunately, if you were an effeminate male and you identified as female, you were called a sissy, which I don't think sounds quite as great as a tomboy.
No.
But people kind of understood what that was, and they accepted it, and they didn't put any pressure on it. And there were some tomboys that I played with that grew up who are, you know, straight identified females. They're married. They have kids. They were just into, you know, boy activities. And, you know, I honestly have never met a sissy, to use that word, that grew up and was more straight identified. But, you know, it's pretty common for tomboys to exist. So in a way, I think people almost had a better understanding of it back then, because it just didn't send up as many alarms.
You think maybe people thought, well, Stephanie is different, or Mary is different, or Michael is different. You do say in your message, though, and this is where we spoke briefly today. I'm not somebody who worries too much about what it is I say, but I do care for people, and I don't want to upset people. When we talk about condition, people's backs get put up straight away, and the defence mechanisms go up. And I wish there were. I mean, I wish I had a better command of the English language to find better words, because whether it's a condition or not, you know, transgender men and women live lives as normal and as fulfilling and as productive as anybody else. But you do believe, don't you, that it is coming from a psychological place. Is that right to say, Stephanie?
In my heart, you know, I love the interview that you did with Rebecca and Glenn Hardy. That was amazing. In my heart, I believe what they believe, which there probably is something genetic to it. The science isn't there. There have been some studies that have been done, but they're on really, really small study groups. We're talking like, you know, 15 to 20 transgendered children. So there just isn't the science to back that up. I have a hunch that it is biological, but there's no denying that this doesn't completely affect my mental health, and this is my mental state. And, you know, the American Psychiatric Association recognizes that. 22 other major medical associations recognize that, you know, this is whatever word you want to use. If you want to sugarcoat it and say a mental health issue or a mental illness or a mental disorder, I absolutely wake up every morning and I know that I'm a male and I have a female body.
I hate the word illness, you see, Stephanie, because I've only ever met one transgender person, and that was at an awards do, as we say, very Irishing to say an awards do, I should say an awards night a couple of years ago. And she was, you know, we'd great fun, we'd great crack, as us Irish say that evening. Illness is a terrible word because how can anybody be ill if, you know, you absolutely believe you're male, and as you said, you have a female body. But illness leans towards something very, very negative, and I don't see it like that. That's why I use the word condition. That's an anomaly. But then some people would say, well, that's very offensive, an anomaly, Richie. I don't know what to say, really. But you're right. I think the jury is out either way scientifically. Nobody can say one way or the other.
And, you know, I'm going to get lambasted by, you know, the politically correct members of my community for whatever language that I use in this interview with you. I use words that common people understand. I'm a comedian and I perform for all different kinds of audiences. And I don't want to use the specific language that is used in our community because people who aren't transgendered, who aren't inside the LGBT community, are not going to understand me and it's going to alienate them. And I want everybody to be able to understand what this is like. It is a harsh word, but, you know, we have to be adults about this and we have to look at what is actually happening. You know, when a child medically transition, we're talking about we're talking about hormones that have irreversible effects. And if they decide to have gender reassignment surgery, we're talking about, you know, a surgeon cutting their body and recreating it. And, you know, I'm not trying to scare anybody away and I'm not trying to be archaic in my terminology, but I also think that we have to talk about what is actually happening and not sugarcoat it in any way, because especially when we're talking about kids, there's no going back. And how are we going to, you know, how are we going to explain to them if we made the wrong choices that, well, we did it because you said that's what you wanted. And what if they say, well, but I was just a kid. I was just a teenager.
And Stephanie, did you ever at any stage feel like having surgery? Did you look into it at all?
Well, I'll tell you my situation. You know, I do have the medical diagnosis of gender dysphoria. I have an amazing therapist, and I think that all people who are transgendered should have a support network. It's stressful. There's no getting around that. You know, I have to negotiate my way through the world, and I have to figure out ways to express how I feel and go into male spaces that are respectful of other people who are using them. My therapist did offer to help me transition, and she offered to support me in that way. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. It would be disingenuous of me to not admit that, you know, I'm 5'11". I'm very androgynous. I look like my father. I have a husky voice and an athletic body. So at a glance, I pass 75% of the time. If I get into a conversation with you, that's where it gets a little hairy, because that's when people go, oh, wait a minute, is this a Butch Dyke? Is this a trans person? You know, like they don't really know what's going on there. So part of me was tempted. Part of me was like, you know what, if I start doing testosterone, I won't have to deal with any of this anymore. I would, you know, after a couple of months of testosterone, I would pass completely. However, because I am in the LGBT community and I know people who have transitioned, when you take cross-sex hormones, that affects your personality. And I think the conclusion that I came to is I kind of like the chill guy that I am now. And, you know, testosterone does make you more aggressive. You know, it changes your personality when you take cross-sex hormones. And I was very confused when I was younger because I knew that I was a boy, but I never saw anybody that was like me. I had no reference. I had no point on the map with which to find myself. And I was listening to our local rock station, and I heard David Bowie for the first time, and it blew my mind. And I started spending all my money on cassette tapes and listening to his music. And that was when I realized what I was. I was like, wait, there are other people out there who are gender benders, who don't fit into, you know, this neat category. And, you know, Iggy Pop said, I wouldn't be ashamed to wear a dress because I wouldn't be ashamed to be a woman. So I think it's okay to be a man and, you know, to not pack myself up with muscle and shoot testosterone, and I'm at peace with where I'm at.
On that, before we talk about schools and education and some of the things that come up on this program, you know, the idea of programming and moving towards, you know, a single gender or a unisex person, I don't know, it's probably a terrible word. Is it something that, I mean, you touched on there some of the difficulties you would have had. Were you, I suppose, as a young adult, Stephanie, as a teenager, when we're all, you know, we're all in love, aren't we, as teenagers? We're all in lust. We can't wait to.
Yes.
Were you conscious? Were you very self-conscious of how others saw you? And were you very careful about observing how other people reacted to you and interacted with you? And was that a difficult time?
Absolutely. I'll share this with you. When I was in the fifth grade in the late 1970s, my awesome Aunt Connie got me a Franco Harris Pittsburgh Steelers jersey because that was my favorite football team. And I couldn't wait to wear it to school on Monday. And I was wearing my green tough skin jeans and my Franco Harris jersey. And my arch nemesis, because everybody has one, and two of her friends literally attacked me on the playground and basically gay bashed me for not following my gender role. It was hard. You know, and the tough thing about being a transgendered kid is up to a certain point, all kids like play around with gender. You know, it doesn't.
Yeah.
We don't really divide until later on when we become prepubescent. So up to a point, people were accepting of what was going on with me. But it was very painful when the boys and the girls started separating, and the girls went to one side and the boys went to the other side. And there I was, stuck in the middle. And I insisted on being male and continuing to participate in all the male activities. And, you know, I mentioned in my Facebook comment, I actually got into a knockdown, drag out fight with a guy at school because he said, no, you can't play with us anymore. You're a girl. And I went off.
And you showed him.
I did.
I don't mean to be flippant in saying that. You showed him that you could could live with him. So before we move on, and there's a lot of comment on this coming in on Twitter, by the way. So those experiences then, when you get into your 20s, mid-20s, we're about the same age, you and I think we were born around about the same time. So when you get into your 20s, you know you're a boy, you're a man. Was there that temptation then? I mean, you didn't succumb to it, you didn't do the transition, but was there that temptation just once and for all to be done with this, so that when people look at me, they see male and they see nothing else?
No, not at all. And I'm going to share something with you that only somebody inside the gay community would know, is most trans people at that age identify as gay. Because my best friend came out to me and told me that he was gay. And we started going to a gay bar together. And you know, I understand why people confuse sexual orientation with gender identity, because when I found out about the gay community, because again, we're talking about the late 1980s, and you know, people didn't even really talk about homosexuality until Rock Hudson died of AIDS.
Yeah.
So when I started going to gay bars, I was like, oh, okay, this is what's going on. I'm a butch lesbian. And many transgendered people from my generation lived as, you know, either an effeminate, you know, like a queen, if you were male, you know, like you would be on that part of the bar, or, you know, and my friends were, you know, butch dykes, and we were very, very male identified. And we understood what that meant. We understood that inside we felt like men, but we were women. And that was kind of our best option, because transgendered, this stuff is so new. I didn't even really know about sex change operations until I saw a made-for-TV movie about the Renee Richards story. And Vanessa Redgrave did a brilliant job. And, you know, Renee Richards was a transsexual woman who was a professional tennis player who transitioned and ended up having to sue to play professional tennis as a woman. So, I mean, the stories of transsexuals were so few and far between. And like I said, a lot of transsexual people my age ended up just identifying as gay for a long time. And that in my 20s, that's I was like, okay, I'm a butch lesbian. This is what's happening. And then
can I ask you this, Stephanie? Can I ask you this?
Sure, absolutely.
Are those labels negative? I mean, when you look at those labels now, I mean, the biggest influence in my life is a man called Billy McCarthy. Billy was gay in Waterford in Ireland for many years, obviously something he kept very private and personal until probably the 1990s. And we used to talk about this. We would go out sometimes and we would go to a gay bar in Waterford City and it was called Gecko. We'd have a chat and Billy would say, oh, she's a dyke or he's this. And I would say, where did those labels come from? And Billy would say, those are labels that came from within the LGBT community. And even then, I wasn't very bright back then, Stephanie, but I used to say to him, are those labels negative? Why would we pigeonhole ourselves like that? What do you think about those labels, Stephanie?
I love using the word dyke. I mean, to me, that word represents somebody who's strong, who's uncompromising, who knows who they are, who, you know, is willing to live life the way that they want to live it. I mean, the gay community is amazing, Richie, you know, and it's funny, you know, I'm just going to say it, you know, like I love the word tranny, and that to some transgendered people, that's the N word.
They don't like it.
But
yeah.
They don't like it at all. They can't stand it. And here's the thing, you know, the people inside the gay community who stood up to the police during Stonewall, those were the trans men and the trans women. Those were the butch dykes and the drag queens. Those, you know, we've really been, you know, protecting and putting our neck out for the LGBT community. And, you know, it's those words inside our community, you know, they're used commonly. And this is why I wanted to do this interview with you, because when you see these extremist fundamentalist members of the LGBT community who want to censor language, who want to pass laws that are literally government sanctioned speech, they're the fundamentalist of our communities. They're the extremist of our communities. Most people in the LGBT community are just completely everyday people. We go about our lives.
It's not coming from the LGBT community. I agree with this. Now, we've arrived at where we wanted to talk about. Anyway, thanks for sharing those experiences, Stephanie. Very personal experiences to you. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate that. And I know that it'll be new for a lot of people listening to this program. It's important, you know, that people do that, that they share their experiences and how they came to be who they are. If you're just joining the program, Stephanie Ann Doyle is live on the line from Maine, beautiful part of the world, as she said herself. Stephanie was born genetic female, but identifies as male, and got in touch with us after an article in the Daily Mail about that couple who are raising the child as gender neutral. Now we've arrived at what's going on in terms of the... Because in that message, you didn't pull any punches. You said that we, and I agree with you, it's not coming from LGBT people in the main. It is not. You said we are being used to push an anti-family agenda and we are being used to destroy the divine masculine and feminine. I thought that was very powerful. Just before you come back in on that, Andrew Pierce is a journalist with the Daily Mail and he appears on Sky News reviewing the newspapers a lot of the time, previewing the newspapers. Now, Andrew's a gay man and he's a conservative and I think he's a member of the Conservative Party. And he wrote a very powerful article about men and women, and you described some of them, Stephanie, who fought for years for the rights of gay men and women not to have their heads kicked in when they went out on the town on a Friday night, not to be spat at, not to be abused by people in the streets, not to be discriminated against in their places of work. And Andrew said that these pioneers who fought for basic human rights, as they did, and Peter Tatchell, a great guy, I've known Peter for years, and others, these men and women, he said they bear no relation whatsoever to what he called the increasingly powerful transgender lobby, and he called it a fascist lobby. And he talked about some of these things, changing the language, you know, referring to pregnant people instead of pregnant women. Now, he didn't go far enough. Maybe he doesn't understand where this is going. But it was a brilliant article, and we talked at length about this a few weeks ago. And an anti-family agenda. Talk to us about that. Who's pushing that agenda?
Well, I spoke to you earlier. It was so hard for me to find information about children transitioning that wasn't completely glowing. definitely from an ideological point of view. I think this is exactly what I think. I think that the cat is out of the bag. People know in general that we're being ripped off, that politicians are crooked, that the way that we're living our life is a big lie. I think that the only thing that politicians have left to keep us from storming the castle with our pitchforks and torches is identity politics. And the gay community and the trans community is ripe to be taken advantage of by identity politics, because identity is such a big part of our lives. And especially up in Canada, that's what's happening up in Canada is like the wild, wild west. And I take it as a warning of what could happen in the U.S. You know, there are politicians up there like Barbara Cook from the Ontario Human Rights Commission, who she's riding the coattails of, you know, the gay community, completely riding the coattails of the gay community. And she's pushing legislation that is giving us a huge black eye.
Tell us more about that, because for many of our listeners, this will be news to them.
Well, I'm referring to a bill that was passed called C-16. And C-16 is the act to amend the Canadian Human Rights Act. It was passed on June 15th of this year. And essentially what Bill 6C16 does, which a lot of people who are in the LGBT community and conservatives were worried about, is it punishes people who refuse to use the preferred gender pronouns of the trans community.
Right.
Words like Zim and Zer instead of he and her. And there's a university professor at the University of Toronto named Jordan Peterson, who was the first person to really kind of raise the red flag against this bill and say, I'm a university professor. I teach clinical psychology. How are we going to force people to use, and let's be honest, made up genders? These are new made up genders.
58, Stephanie, isn't there? Something like 58
genders.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. There's endless. It gets worse all the time.
Yeah.
How are we going to force people in positions who teach? How are we going to tell them? How are we going to tell somebody who teaches evolutionary biology that you can't use he, she, and her because there's a trans person in the class who is going to get triggered and have negative emotions? You know what? The implications of it are amazing. Unfortunately, the bill did pass, and they lied through their teeth. Barbara Cook lied through her teeth. They said that, you know, nobody would, you know, nobody could be jailed because of this. You know, nobody was going to lose their job. They're just trying to create a safe space for transgendered people. Well, I'm going to break it down for you very quickly, legally, why somebody can be thrown in jail for not using the preferred gender pronoun. Say, for example, you're at a university and you have somebody who demands that you refer to them in a certain way. And maybe they do it in a way that's kind of disrespectful, you know, like 99% of the time, people will refer to you by the gender that you prefer because people are just decent 99% of the time, but you have to give respect to get respect. So say, for example, you're dealing with an extremist or a reactionary transgendered person, and they get up in your face about it, and you say, no, I don't want to refer to you that way. Well, now, because of Bill C-16, that person can compel you to go in front of a tribunal, the Ontario Tribunal or the Federal Tribunal, and you can either pay a fine, you can receive an order to cease and desist, or an order to compel you to do something. And if you refuse to pay the fine, you'll be held in contempt of court. And if you're held in contempt of court, you'll be sent to jail. And Jordan Peterson, to his credit, has said, if I get dragged in front of this tribunal, I'm not going to pay the fine. I'll force you to send me to jail. And if you send me to jail, I'll go on a hunger strike. There's no way, as a transgendered person, that I want this to be blamed on the transgendered community. This is literally government-mandated speech. This is Orwellian.
And it's anti-family.
It's completely Orwellian.
And it's anti-family. And ultimately, it's, ironically, isn't it funny, Stephanie, when we talk about proposed laws, which are supposed to be about diversity, but in fact, they are anti-diversity. It's not...
They're completely anti-diversity, and I find it completely ironic that the fundamentalists in the LGBT community, who are the ones who preach the loudest about tolerance and diversity, are the most intolerant people I've ever met in my life. And I want to read the actual legal statement about what this law means, so we understand like how ridiculous this is. Because not only could someone be pulled in front of this tribunal, but they could be pulled in front of this tribunal for accidentally misgendering somebody. So let me read this to you. The Ontario Human Rights Commission has a policy that states, refusing to refer to a trans person by their chosen name and a personal pronoun that matches their gender identity will likely be discrimination. If the harasser did not know or intend to harass, it is still harassment.
If the harasser didn't know or didn't intend.
That's right. Or intend it. And the Department of Justice in Canada has said they're going to follow the same guidelines as the Ontario Human Rights Commission. So the Department of Justice in Canada is going to do whatever the Ontario Human Rights Commission says about this. And that's their policy, that it is still discrimination. Even if the harasser didn't know or intend to harass, it is still harassment.
Tell me this, Stephanie. By the way, folks, Stephanie Ann Doyle is on the line. Stephanie is a comedian, born female, identifies as male. It's wonderful having Stephanie on the program. I should have referred to you as he, shouldn't I, Stephanie, really?
No, you know what? And that's the thing.
I'm an idiot, really.
People refer to me as all different genders. You know, I have friends who call me she, you know, friends who call me he. I get called different genders all day long, so it's fine.
Okay. No, but I wasn't being in any way facetious.
No, not at all. It's hard. It's hard even when you want to. This is something new, so we are literally retraining our brains, because you're looking at a person and you see some, you know, depending on how far in a transition somebody is, you're looking at somebody who has traditional biological sex characteristics, and you're trying to remember that they're a different gender.
But you know what, Stephanie? Do you know what happened to humanity? What happened to somebody say, I mean, if I remember rightly, somebody said to me many years ago, somebody who I met through Waterford Local Radio, who was, I think, very androgynous, and I might have been saying he, and it was, it might have been a woman who was very androgynous, and said to me, would you mind referring to me as she, but very friendly? What happened to humanity? What happened to people saying, hey, listen, Richie, if you don't mind, would you mind referring to me as he or she? But this kind of militant, these are my pronouns, and you will use them, or if you don't, I might contact some authority. That is, to me, that's lunacy.
Think about the chilling effect that this is going to have on the actual lives of trans people, Richie. I'm a realist. You know, I you know, I was a business manager, you know, I managed two restaurants and, you know, what is the effect going to be on trans people being employed? Trans people are already twice as likely to be unemployed. If I was a business owner, I would be terrified in Canada to hire a transgendered person because I could be dragged in front of a tribunal for unintentionally harassing somebody. So how is this going to affect the ability of trans people to get a job? That's why this stuff angers me. You know, it's,
and we're seeing it. Sorry to interrupt. We're seeing it everywhere. And this, to give David his credit, I think in terms of his most recent books, the last 5-6 years, nobody really wrote about it in that way. David said, "What's incredible about this is that it cropped up everywhere at the same time." We you know, we've had a book that's been drawn up, and I believe it has been read or has been given to some primary school children in this country, asking the children to consider, you know, multiple different genders. Not to keep pressing you on this, Stephanie, and I don't want to keep harping on it, but you did say, and I agree with this, by the way, and I'm not trying to get you into any trouble at all. But you
not at all.
But you did say that it's anti-family and that it's being used to destroy the divine masculine and feminine. I agree with that, and there was a time when I thought anybody saying that was crackers. They were crazy. It's lunacy. But you see that through your own research. And on that, is it something that your gay and lesbian friends, your bisexual friends, is it a source of discussion now? Are gay men and women openly talking about this, saying, Jesus, what's going on here?
Absolutely. I really believe this all comes back to identity politics. The jig is up. These politicians have nothing left but identity politics. And the situation, and, you know, they keep us ratcheted up in high stress levels 24/7, you know, in the United States, you know, like 1 month they want you to be terrified of the Russians. The next month they want you to be terrified of North Korea. Now they want us to be terrified of what happened in Charlottesville. So, you know, we're walking around being bathed in stress as it is. And, you know, we're weaker when we're not strong, you know, we're weaker when we don't have strong family units. And, you know, I mean, it's been proven that the Democratic Party, you know, in the 1980s with the Welfare Reform Act, that was a direct attack on families. You know, there were, and the crime reform bill that, you know, took so many fathers away from their families. I mean, this, I don't think it's new. I just think that the LGBT community is particularly vulnerable to it because, you know, identity is a big deal, and children transitioning is talked about all the time in the gay community, and most of the, because children are transitioning younger and younger and younger. And, you know,
do you know what, Stephanie? Can I come in on that? Because
sure,
this is really
absolutely important.
You mentioned Rebecca and Glenn Hardy earlier on.
Yes.
Who were on the program. And I really, really appreciated what Rebecca was saying about their daughter, born a boy but identifies as a girl. And I have no issue whatsoever with that. If your child begins to express himself or herself in ways that contradict the gender they were assigned at birth or that they were born with, and start to talk about that, you know, that's one thing, and you have to deal with that. And by the sounds of it, and I know Rebecca's story was covered by the BBC as well, they've been wonderful with their daughter. Who could argue with that? And it sounds like your mum was amazing, Stephanie, as well, by the way. But this idea that you'd be telling children, well, forget about being a man, excuse me, forget about being male or female now. It's a brave new world out there, kids. You have all these genders you can think about. It's incredibly destructive, I think, to the psyche and to the personality of a child. And that's where you might create a condition. Because I don't believe that. And I swear to, if there is a God, I swear on all that's sacred, I swear on the life of the future, Mrs. Allen. I don't think for a minute that you've got a mental illness. I think it might be an anomaly or a condition. But might, what the hell do I know? I know nothing, and the science is not in on it. But it's certainly not a mental illness. It's not a negative thing. It's a thing.
No, not at all. And, I'll tell you, Richie, I'm a licensed caregiver in the state that I live in, and I manage one group home and two others. I used to manage restaurants. And if anything, I'm the person in my group that you come to when you got a problem. You know, I'm an incredibly grounded, integrated human being. And that's why I wanted to share my story, because people truly cannot understand what a transgendered person is. And it is literally so simple. You don't think that you're the other sex. You know you are.
I know it. Can I read a couple of tweets for you, by the way?
I quickly want to say,
go ahead.
There's a brilliant documentary, and it won the Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival. It's called Southern Comfort, and it's a really important movie for transgendered people. It's about a trans man named Robert Eads, and it's important because it shows the life of transgendered people who live in rural America, because a lot of times when you're talking about the LGBT community, you're talking about major cities like New York City and San Francisco, and this shows what it is actually like to be a transgendered person, you know, out in the boonies, and how they navigate that. And I think it does the best job that I've ever seen of showing what it is actually like to be transgendered and to live this life. But I will warn you, make sure you have a box of tissues, because it's a tearjerker.
Is it a tearjerker? We watched a film called Gifted yesterday, which is a bit of a tearjerker. Now that you mentioned tearjerkers, I want to read a few tweets. Some lovely comments have come in. Mark tweets, Stephanie has the bollocks to say it like it is. I'm not sure he's aware of the pun there. And not become a virtue signalling merchant looking for a job with Owen Jones on the BBC. Dick Gregory, or RIP Dick Gregory on Twitter, tweets, Stephanie is brilliant. Love that she's not emotional and she understands how hard it is to get around the pronouns. Brian tweets, Stephanie has identified something that the trans community is told will benefit them, but will in fact hinder them. He's referring to your comment about the employment there. At Lone Horse tweets, Ontario, loads of dark acts, and TBMC there, also a higher percentage of trans in extreme trauma victims, says at Lone_Horse. You'll have to send me some information on that. Susan tweets, thank heavens for such a grounded explanation of body dysphoria. Stephanie is an amazing human, so strong, very complete, and a lovely person. Loads of tweets like that, by the way, have been coming in for you. Thanks for that, folks. I really appreciate that. John Wilderness says, yes, Richie and Stephanie, 58 plus Facebook gender options. I didn't realise that, but Facebook give you the choice of 58 plus. And there's a lot of lovely comments coming in for you there. It's 90 seconds to the top of the hour. We've got about 3 minutes left, and I'm loath to keep talking, and I want to give you the 3 minutes, because I'm sure there's one or two things you'd like to add before we run out of time.
Well, I want to speak, because I think the most issue is transgendered children. I want to speak to the parents of transgendered children. You are of interest to the medical and the pharmaceutical community. There are doctors who are making a ton of money off this. There's a doctor named Curtis Crane, who's one of the most well-regarded doctors in this field, who is being sued by 6 patients right now. Hormone replacement therapy is a growth industry. It would be very, 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 very easy for the transgendered community to be taken advantage of the medical and pharmaceutical industry, because we're talking about people who are, you know, were emotionally involved in this. So it would be very easy to take advantage of us. And if you are the parent of a transgendered child, please take small steps, be slow and steady, because if your child is transgendered, they will let you know. I have so many hilarious stories from transgendered people about the lengths that we went to as kids to live the truth of our lives. So there is absolutely no reason to rush this. As more and more people transition, more and more adults are having to detransition. And some of these changes can't be undone. And I would like to speak to people who are not transgendered to please understand that when you are dealing with somebody in regards to their gender pronouns, you're dealing with somebody who has been incredibly stressed about this, who probably has been harassed, who probably has gone through a whole heck of a lot. And I would just ask for your understanding. And, you know, if you do end up running into one of these reactionary types, you're dealing with a very unhappy human being.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right.
I'd like to make a short quote from an amazing article called The Detransitioners. It was in the Seattle Stranger, and it's caused a huge uproar in the trans community. It was written by Katie Herzog, and it's the best article I've ever read about transgendered people anywhere. It's very fair and balanced, and there's a lot of information in there about what it means to be transgendered. This is a really beautiful quote. This is from a man named Ryan, who was on estrogen therapy, and then he stopped and he said this: "You can change your body through hormones or surgery, but unless you accept it, the dysphoria will never go away."
Stephanie, I've really enjoyed listening to you, and I don't say that unless I mean it. I really have, and I'd like you to come back on again in the future. Thanks, first of all, for agreeing to come on. Thanks, second of all, for going away and doing all that research that you obviously did to come back as well briefed as you obviously are. I really appreciate it. There's been a load of lovely comments on our Twitter feed from people who've been absolutely gripped by what you've been saying over the last 40 minutes or thereabouts. Thanks for doing it, and please stay in touch with us. We are connected on social media, and please come back again in the future.
Thank you so much, Richie. There is nothing like your show anywhere, and I appreciate you having this conversation, because this is where this conversation needs to take place.
It was an
Thank
honor.
You.
It was an honor. Thank you, Stephanie. That was Stephanie Ann Doyle, live from Maine, the great state of Maine. Stephanie's a comedian, got in touch with the programme about 10 days ago. Stephanie was born female but identifies as a male, and did a fantastic job there of talking about who's pushing the agenda on children and why the reality for transgender men and women, their reality growing up and coming to terms with their with themselves, why you should be very careful about transitioning. Terrific stuff. We're going to take some music, and Stephanie said she's a huge David Bowie fan. I heard that loud and clear. So here's a bit of Bowie for Stephanie. This is Changes. There's no Freudian slip there. This is a great song. Massive thanks to Stephanie Ann Doyle. Back in a couple of minutes. Don't forget Dr. Rainer Kurtz joins the programme in a few minutes' time. This is Wednesday's Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com.
Still don't know what I was waiting for, and my time was running wild. Dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Change,
turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't wanna be a richer man.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
It's gonna have to be a different man. Now may change me, but I can't trace down.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with orgone energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We're offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's VBRATION.com/Richie. Thank you.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And we're live on Fab Radio International, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio and RichieAllen.co.uk. My next guest is a great, great man. Had a terrific conversation with him a couple of times on the programme in the last year. It's been a while since he was on. He's a hugely experienced and, I believe, very gifted chartered psychologist with over a quarter of a century of research, psychometric research and development experience. And as we talked about in the past on the programme, he spent over 4 years working with survivors of ritual abuse. Now, I want to talk to him about forthcoming workshops that he'll be participating in along with the psychotherapist Sandra Fecht. Sandra has been on the programme as well, another terrific professional, a great lady, of course, from Canada. Let's welcome back to the programme Dr. Rainer Kurtz. Rainer, welcome back. How are you?
Good evening, Richie. I'm very well, thank you.
And thanks for putting up with my silliness and foolishness. You were supposed to be on the programme last week, but then things happened and you're a very patient man. I do appreciate that. Thanks for coming on, Rainer. I meant what I said. It was wonderful having you on the programme in the past, and it's about time we reconnected. Before we talk about the workshops that you're going to be doing, and this is hugely important work, and it's obviously hugely relevant to the issues we discuss on this programme, I'm going to throw a curveball at you now, but you don't have to answer this because I don't think you were able to hear the first hour of the programme. But I've been talking quite a lot lately about transgender men and women, and talking to school children and asking them to consider many different types of gender and why that might be problematic for children. And I've just had a wonderful woman on called Stephanie Ann Doyle. Stephanie was born a woman but identifies as male. We had a great conversation about the agenda to push gender fluidity. And in the conversation, we talked a little bit about whether gender dysphoria is physical, if it is biological, or if it is a psychological condition of some sort. I just wanted to ask you, and you don't have to answer this because we weren't going to talk about this. Is there a psychological consensus on when people are born male and identify as female, or vice versa? Is there a consensus on why that happens, Rainer, do you think?
Probably not. So I don't claim to have much experience or expertise on this, but I think it's a very important topic. I caught the last few minutes of the interview, and the person was very kind of sensible and sensitive about urging caution and not to rush into things, as some of the changes are irreversible. And so one of the saddest sights I have had was actually a male who decided to transition, have hormone treatment, growing boobs, and then halfway through the course changing their mind and now being kind of in limbo, half transitioned. That made not a nice sight, I have to say. And it's a very difficult topic. And I talked to some fundamental Christians recently who are very concerned about how this agenda is pushed by the minister responsible, who is, I think, came out as lesbian herself about a year ago.
Yeah.
And it's really being normalized. And that is quite worrying. And adding to that, I'm in regular contact with someone who knows quite a lot about extreme abuse and the kind of mind control and so on that is taking place is increasing gender confusion. And so that seems to be a deliberate activities there to mix things up and normalize strange, relatively unnatural things.
That's a brilliant answer. Thanks for answering that. So asking finally, because we're going to talk about you then and the work you're going to be doing very soon at the workshops, which are hugely important. But finally on that, asking very young children to consider that they might not know their true gender and that they should be open to 50 or 60 genders could be potentially very dangerous for the development of a child, Rainer.
I would think so.
No doubt about it. Good stuff. That's something we might get into in the future. Loads of interest in you coming back on the programme. We talked at length, you and I, in the past about ritual abuse, trauma and the effects of trauma on children. You're going to murder me when this programme is over because I'm going off just slightly left field again. A listener, when I posted on Facebook today that you were coming on, a listener said to me, Richie, Rainer works with trauma and with children and with adults who have suffered trauma. Ask him about the reporting of terror attacks like the attacks in Barcelona. Now, that's interesting, Rainer, because you were due to be on the programme last Thursday. We rescheduled because of what happened in Barcelona. Our listeners believe that the reporting of these events is designed to provoke a traumatic response in young people particularly. Again, before we move on to talk about what we agreed to talk about, do you think that's true? Is there any evidence of that?
I haven't researched that, so can't talk about evidence, but I found your observations very insightful. And it's not perhaps so much the reporting, it's how these things come about that that certain things could have been prevented, certain traumas that are in the public eye. And I think that's the bigger problem.
I'm delighted you're back. Dr. Rainer Kurtz is on the line, folks. Rainer, tell us about the workshops that you'll be doing again with Sandra Fecht. And these are hugely interesting and hugely important because we are contacted all the time by people who are survivors of abuse or know somebody very close to them, somebody very personal to them who has been abused and lives with the trauma of that. Tell us about these workshops.
So there's a workshop on the 22nd, 23rd and 24th of September that Sandra Fecht from Canada, counseling psychologist, will be leading. I will be doing a 1-hour lecture slot on Friday evening talking about family court child smuggling, where I explain the kind of case that I've been talking about quite a lot. We will also have Wilfred Wong doing a 1-hour slot on Friday evening. He has been campaigning against satanic ritual abuse for 20 years in the UK. I met up with him recently at a fundamental Christian event, and it was very interesting to find out about how he got involved and how he got persecuted and slaughtered in the media by some people who don't like to hear the message being spread. So we will be talking about complex trauma and satanic ritual abuse on Friday night. Venue is near Euston Station, very central. The evening lecture is just £30, just covering the costs. And then Saturday, Sunday will be the workshop that is more about healing. That's for therapists, psychologists, also for survivors of abuse. And people tend to find it very helpful. Sandra has a very welcoming style and very calmly deals with issues that arise with all the programming that goes on. Of course, people can get triggered, but that's part and parcel of surfacing complex trauma, is that people might get triggered, and that needs to be accepted and dealt with, and then people need to move on.
You said very nice things about Sandra Feck there, but you can turn that mirror around on yourself, because when we've had you on the program in the past, a couple of people got in touch with us who've gotten to know you over the years and said wonderful things about you and how helpful you've been to them in dealing with these issues. You talked about the family courts and child smuggling, and this is a recurring theme on this program in the last couple of years. I want to remind you folks, Dr. Rainer Kurtz is on the line. He's going to be with me till the end of the program. If there's anything you'd like me to put to Rainer, please tweet at Richie Allen Show. Ask me a question to put to Rainer. Do it now. Don't wait, and I will put the question to him. I had a wonderful grandmother on from Wales last week called Samantha Richards, wonderful woman. Her son, Macaulay, was never even given a chance, really. His former partner, by all accounts, a lovely young woman who was dealing with bipolar disorder. She became pregnant during her time with Macaulay. He wasn't told about it. The social services decided they were going to take the child anyway for future emotional harm. And yes. This is great. And I know you have a lot to say about this, and I'm going to let you go in a minute, and I'm going to shut up and you can take the floor. But what was extraordinary was, for me, listening to this, Rainer, and I don't have any qualifications. I'm not qualified man like you or qualified like Sandra. But I couldn't help but thinking the damage that has been done to Macaulay, the father, to the girl with bipolar, because I can't imagine why somebody with bipolar disorder couldn't be helped and couldn't still have their child with them. The damage done to the mum, the damage done to the father, and the damage done to the grandmother, Samantha, who was on the programme. And I couldn't help but thinking, these people need support, and they need psychological support, and they're probably not getting it. And how many tens of thousands of people are in that situation? Their children were stolen, and they spend all their energy fighting to try and see their children. But they've been damaged, there's no doubt about that, by the experiences, and they need help. Do you know what I'm getting at? It seems like they're going through all of this, they're trying to deal with it, they're trying to fight the system, and at the same time, they need psychological support, they need counselling, they need therapy, don't they?
Yeah, but the whole system is rigged against the protective parents, against the natural parents. It's a $2 billion, possibly $3 billion pound industry, and I'd like to make quite a statement that people will find controversial, but the primary function of the family court system seems to be to cover up and shield satanic ritual abuse. That's the primary function, in my opinion.
Now, for some of our listeners who this will be new to them, how does that work, by stealing children from families who haven't done anything wrong for fear of emotional abuse? How does that help cover up satanic ritual abuse? Are we talking about children are being provided for these monsters?
Yes, that would be the extreme end, but it seems to be more a machinery. It's a sausage factory, and they need a well-oiled sausage factory that runs smoothly. 99% of cases where the social services request a child to be taken into care are granted by the judges. So it's almost a foolproof system. And so under that cover of the machinery that targets anybody and innocent people and so on, under that cover, horrendous things can happen. And talking about whales, I'd like to talk a bit about Dr. Schock, which is perhaps the most dangerous psychiatrist that I've met, because he has been covering up toddler rape and most probably human sacrifice murder in Southwest London.
Now, you've named somebody there, right? Now, he's not here to defend himself, and we'll obviously have to get in touch with him at a later stage, yeah.
I gave him a nickname, Dr. Shock, because he likes to give electroshock.
We're not going to name the guy, right? We're not going to give his real name out on air.
So don't worry.
So no, I know you're far too clever for that, Rainer. I always do the disclaimer anyway, no matter who I'm speaking to. So this is a psychiatrist working in Wales, and you believe this guy has active knowledge that children are being abducted for the purposes of ritual satanic abuse, and this guy is helping cover it up. Why? Is he involved in it?
Yes, I'm afraid so. So the story goes that the young mother that I talked about in my first interview, she was misdirected by vested interest to the south of Wales, where a particular psychologist has a particular powerful position. And there's also a judge, which seems to be part of the same gang. And then the whole persecution machinery started, stalking, police ignoring every request for help. And then this toddler rape seemed to have happened in broad daylight in a cul-de-sac. And police had instructed the lady to delay reporting for 4 weeks or 1 month, ostensibly because there would be a undercover police operation. So guess what? Of course, once she reported after 3 weeks, that psychiatrist said, oh, the lady is delusional. But as it turns out, that psychiatrist seems to be a family friend and associate of the main perpetrator. And so I made a 10-page police initially a complaint to the council. That complaint got pretty much, I didn't get any reply to it, in spite of naming the person, explaining the background, and that he had dealings with the young mother when she was 13, 14, when she apparently had a breeder baby impregnated by a member of the cult. And 3 years on, I actually heard from her that guy got involved already there in the mid-90s, flown in from another country that was mentioned on your show yesterday, and basically after 10 years given citizenship. And I had that guy once on the phone when I tried to find his GM, General Medical Council, registration number. I sent an email to some people, and I get that guy on the phone, and I briefly talked about the diagnosis that he proffered. And basically what he said to the young mother, I've been outside your parents' house. I know that your parents are into devil worship. I used to be interested in that, but I'm not anymore. People were saying a baby is coming. She says, oh yes, I had a baby at 13, 14, and the baby disappeared. And then the guy says, I've got a friend high up in the senior civil service who told me to diagnose you as schizophrenic, schizoid, paranoid. I know that that's not the right diagnosis, but I'm going to do as I'm told. And don't expect me to remember that I've said that, or that I would remember this in court.
Why do you think he was so candid with the woman?
Good question. Because he knew that she knew him. And at the time, she gave me one story of a family that is friends with both of them. So she explained who the contact in between is and how she knows that guy from many years ago. 3 years later, she actually told me that guy applied electroshock to her on 3 occasions over a 15-year period without medical need.
without any need for it.
So the reason for giving electroshock is to make people forget. And so probably he was basically, as it looks, employed by the cult to make the young, the teenager forget that she was pregnant and gave birth to a child. So basically by frying the brain, you introduce memory lapses. Then the same was done during the court proceedings in the hostel. And then 2 years ago, apparently he helped to authorize frying her brain while an unrelated piece of surgery was done in somewhere in the north of England. It's unbelievable, but given everything else that happened in that case, I have to take it very seriously. Those disclosures, I put them into a 45-page third-party crime report that I submitted to police. But of course, police don't do anything.
They don't do anything about it. Now, when we first spoke, you and I talked about the fact that, according to the British media, and sadly, 99 out of 100 people, I think anyway, get their information from BBC, Sky News, Channel 4, LBC Radio. People don't want to admit that. We tell ourselves, oh, the independent media is doing so much better than it used to do. Yes, it might be. There might be some good programs out there. But the fact is, the majority of people get their information from the sources I mentioned. And those sources have unilaterally decided that this is the stuff of fantasy. It is nonsense. We've heard long-winded rants from people like Ian Dale on LBC, from James O'Brien on LBC, from other presenters on national television, saying that this is a farce. Exaro News, lawyers, the Hampstead Heath case, crazy, crazy lawyers, the stuff of the Hammer horror movies of the 1960s. And when people hear you, this is what's important. When people hear you, they take a deep breath because they think, Jesus, Richie's got, you know, we have a chartered psychologist on here. We have a man with a terrific resume who's achieved a lot as a clinician, as a psychologist. So, you know, maybe they have a moment of pause and they think, right, I look into this. Who's behind it, Rainer? I mean, in the time we've had over the last year and a half, who is doing this to children? Is it incredibly wealthy people? Is it ordinary people? Could it be the guy across the street from you who goes to work in the factory? Who is doing this? Who's organising it? And go ahead.
Yeah. So abuse is really can happen in any part of society. I recently went to the website of Caroline Spring, who runs POTS, Positive Outcomes for Dissociative Survivors, and she's very good, extremely competent. And she says recovery is her revenge. And she makes the point, it could be the bricklayer next door, it could be the MP, anyone could be involved. What is happening is that we've got a systematic discourse of disbelief that goes back more than 100 years. So Pierre Janet in France, he discovered what complex trauma is about, traumatic memories, described everything rather well. Then came Sigmund Freud, following in a similar line, writing a monograph on hysteria and then going around Vienna saying, look, I solved it here, like a PhD thesis. But Vienna society didn't want to know. And so he changed his story that it's all in the mind, probably under pressure from the Masonic and abuser kind of networks. And that's how basically mental health got derailed. And we get the Kreplin kind of, a neo-Kreplin types of psychiatry, which basically tries to pretend that it's a biological thing and it's genetic. And until the 1970s, there was no acknowledgement whatsoever of a link between abuse and mental health issues.
They blamed the therapist, didn't they? They said the therapists were putting ideas in the minds of the patients. I remember reading articles going back many years. And even then, you know, I was, because I'd just begun to read David's books, even then I began to be a bit suspicious, because like when Sandra first spoke on the programme and she said that she was hearing stories from grown men and women, credible stories, and when she was doing her own research, she was finding that people all over the world, independent of one another, were telling similar stories. And that can't be explained away. And I say to people all the time, Richie, why, this guy Rainer Kurtz, very smart man, why is he saying this? This can't be happening. But it is happening. And you're saying that these horrible things that we hear about, these horrendous rituals, some cases where, you know, people dress up and children are haunted and these horrendous things, you could have people, you know, a bricklayer might be involved. You said a judge might be involved, an MP might be involved, the local butcher might be involved. But they might be connected through Masonic lodges. Or is that just a part of it?
Yeah, like within Freemasonry, of course, you've got sensible people as well as not so sensible people. And like when the shooting in Dunblane happened, one of the Masonic Lodge leaders said, oh, I'm surprised that there seems to be a secret society within our secret society. So it's important not to tar everyone with the same brush.
Yeah.
But yes, roughly speaking, Freemasonry is a primary vehicle. And basically the timescales we have to think about, this is stuff that has been going on for hundreds and thousands of years. It's before the Abrahamic religions, before Judaism, Christianity, and Muslim Islam. Think about it that way. What was happening with the Aztecs or in Ireland several thousand years ago, if that kind of stuff was practiced at that time, why should it have gone away?
Yeah. Our listeners, Rainer, sorry to interrupt you. Our listeners, and I think I can say collectively, because we've been doing the show nearly 3 years now, they believe that you're right, that within Masonic lodges, there are groups within groups. And I believe this too. When I was in Spain some years back, a guy we got to know quite well from Nottingham said to me, if you come back to the UK, Richie, I might, you know, propose you to be a member of the Masons. And he had a key ring, and he gave me a key ring. And I knew a little bit about the Masons, and I said, what's the story? And he said, oh, it's, you know, it's good, Richie, networking, you'll get things done, it greases the wheels and stuff like that. And I think on that level, I believe that. But like you, I think within, there are levels within levels. But our listeners believe that this is very, very prevalent at the, among the elites, among the political class and the banking elites. They believe there's evidence historically, whether it's those weird photographs of the Rothschilds dining out 50, 60 years ago, wearing the, you know, the satanic costumes and the goat's heads. Is it prevalent amongst the elites and the very wealthy and royalty?
Yeah, I looked at a YouTube video about Belgium, about a particular castle, and it had the black nobility described, and it was quite disconcerting, especially when even Professor Konrad Lorenz, famous biologist, was named in that YouTube video. And of course, the Kevin Annett exposure brought down, as it seems, some aristocrats in the Netherlands, Belgium, and Spain at the same time as Pope Benedict abdicated. And yes, that's roughly the kind of the lie of the land. Ninth Circle is often mentioned, but I don't know much about it. And actually, what I would like to talk a bit more about is this false memory stuff that you start to allude to.
Yeah.
And basically, what I discovered after almost 5 years of research is that in 1995, there was an article in The Psychologist that was very good by the Working Party for Repressed Memory. And guess what percentage of psychologists reported that clients have mentioned satanic ritual abuse? guess what the percentage figure was.
Right. I'm going to say it's probably higher than most people would imagine. So I'm going to say 60%.
So it's not that bad. So I would have expected 1 or 2%, and so I was quite pleased to see, or not pleased is the wrong word, I was surprised that 15%. 15% of psychologists have encountered allegations of satanic ritual abuse. So I found that quite an astonishing high number, because it's such a silenced topic that no one talks about. And people have to risk their reputation, like I have to do, by talking about it in public. But I want to break the ice and make it a topic that needs to be discussed in public and that can't be brushed under the table, under the carpet anymore. And basically, the BPS has prevented me from doing my bit by canceling my symposium at the annual conference in May in a highly irregular manner. So I'm being people trying to silence me.
Of course they are. Because as I mentioned earlier on, you're qualified. You see, you're qualified. You've got an outstanding resume. Of course they're going to try and silence you. You're not anybody talking about this. My friend and colleague in Dublin, Jean-Anne Crowley, the actress, well, she's actually in Cleggan at the moment. She says, I think the false memory syndrome was set up to discredit the MK Ultra victims and say that it was all in their heads.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah,
a way of heading them off at the pass. By the way, when I said 60%, I thought that you were going to say that a huge amount of clinicians reported it, but then it was buried. But even, I mean, I was way off the mark, but 15% is still a huge amount, isn't it? It's a massive amount. 15%. How can you say that, you know, the stories being told to those clinicians, to those psychologists, those counsellors, are false memories that people have just, invented them? But I've had people on this programme, a wonderful woman who's been on a few times, Samantha Ford, who was abused when she was very, very young, 13, 14 years old at the time, and her abuser was wealthy and he was connected, and they took her to a very well-known private hospital. And you talk about connections amongst these people, Rainer. The people at the hospital were quite happy. Yeah. Were quite happy knowing what had happened to her. Were quite happy to effectively kidnap her in order to, you know, maybe work on her. I mean, she believes that she was implanted with a chip of some description. And that is just, I mean, that really is horror film, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street type stuff. You know, hospital would take you in and try and work on your mind so that you don't go and blow the whistle on what's happened to you. It's sickening stuff.
Yeah, but it's institutionalized, especially psychiatry. So I know one very good psychiatrist called Colin Ross in the US. He has written 20 books, including on MK Ultra, the CIA doctors. And so basically people in psychiatry in particular have been at it since the inception of psychiatry. And there might be well-meaning people in there, but they only have three types of pills, electroshock and frontal lobotomy and everything else. Many of them can't be bothered. And what they like to do is exercise power and call people delusional and section people. And in Colin Ross, this book, he says that in the trauma model of psychiatry, the current type of psychiatry would really be just a small part, and people would really start to understand the causal relationships between neglect and trauma and then dissociative features, also schizophrenia, and first the current generation of psychiatrists almost has to die out so that a new generation can take a fresh look. Siegel is another good psychiatrist in the US. In the UK, I find most of psychiatry just on the side of state power. Simon Wesley is a cheerleader for the discourse of disbelief. He seems to be a very powerful person who controls the media. media discourse on medical matters. Of course, there was Virginia Bottomley giving money Professor LaFontaine to write a report. I have reasons to be suspicious of that report. She seems to be actually involved herself. There is that leaked document that's on the Chris Spivey website. I've done the posters on that. The poster names 150 people, including four psychologists, four psychiatrists. Anthony Baker is mentioned, who twice was put in front of the General Medical Council. He also seems to be the guy who covered up the Norwich 3 case, basically getting three innocent people into prison so that a few people can make a few millions from long-term foster care and God knows what. So basically, it's just the way anyone would imagine that things are, that basically institutions shield each other, that the vested interest infiltrate. And if that has been going on for years and years, then of course it's very difficult to do something about it.
I just want to make one quick point there. I remember a couple of years ago, it was fairly unusual at the time, but the husband of the former health secretary, Virginia Bottomley, a guy called Sir Peter Bottomley, bigwig, as they say in the UK, a bigwig in the Conservative Party, he came out and publicly denied that he was involved in paedophilia because there were a lot of internet rumours at the time. And he did warn, quite understandably, he did warn that he would sue any newspaper or any television or radio programme if they repeated false internet rumours linking him to paedophilia. Neither he nor his wife, the former health secretary, have ever been arrested or questioned in relation to sex abuse or anything like that. It must be mentioned. I'm aware of Spivey, and there's another guy whose name is not going to get mentioned on this programme, who have mentioned former Conservative Party ministers and such like. But for my part, for my point, Rainer, they've never provided anything that is irrefutable proof, if you understand where I'm coming from. So I just want to make that absolutely clear. Peter Bottomley, in an unusual move, it was unusual, came out and said, look, I've not been involved in paedophilia or anything like it, and I will sue anybody whoever says anything like that. Just want to make that point. Dr. Rainer Kurtz is on the line. We're very, very happy to have him back. We'll give you more information in a minute about the workshops taking place later this week. This is hugely important information, it really is. And it's not outside of some independent media sources. This is not getting discussed because establishment media and establishment figures have effectively declared this as fantasy and it's not happening. We know it is happening and we're delighted that people like Dr. Rainer Kurtz are talking about it and putting it on the agenda there. People ask me to ask you, and I mean you can't really have an opinion on this, you can if you want, but the BBC journalist who blew the whistle on the Jimmy Savile story died of a stroke earlier this week. People are saying they're always suspicious when young men or young women die of strokes or heart attacks. I suppose we have to keep an open mind, Rainer, when people come out and talk about these things. I suppose we have to keep an open mind that there are people who would target them.
Absolutely. And I heard Jay Parker interview the American guy you had on. He explained how it works, that basically if someone seriously investigates, if they get too far, then they can be quite dangerous.
Yeah, the woman.
And so I haven't witnessed anything. Thank God, I haven't witnessed anything. So I can't be a witness in any criminal proceedings. So that's why I'm perhaps less less threatened than those people who get really close to things.
But you do have to keep an eye on your six, as the Americans say. Watch your six, watch your back. And I don't say that lightly. It was Liz McKean, of course, who talked about Saville. In fact, she found it very difficult to get the BBC to cover the story, even though she had her story. It was watertight about what Saville was doing. Do you think the Saville story terrified the establishment, Rayner? Do you think they properly panicked when it came out about him? Because it wasn't just the sinister, sickening things that Saville was doing, but it was the fact that he was obviously enabled to do what he was doing by his bosses, by his peers, by certain politicians. So I think the establishment had major panic when the Saville story came out.
Yeah, they had major panic, but my sources tell me that they are quite relieved how much they got away with it. All these little separate reports by all the different locations, no one linking the stuff together, people ridiculing the two reports about Saville being involved in satanic rituals with rape. So the establishment thinks they got off lightly.
They dodged the bullet, maybe, yeah. And especially that, you know, sources like Exaro and others have been shut down and they keep saying it's all a hoax. I just want to mention something. And, you know, it's not that I'm careful. I believe in practicing journalism. Being a decent journalist means that you speak about things that you can prove and you don't accuse anybody of anything that you can't prove. But I'm going to say this. There is enough evidence, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, there is enough evidence about the children who disappeared in British Columbia in 1964, children that were taken out on a picnic by the current Queen of England and her entourage, 10 children. There is enough evidence because some of those children's siblings and their families have never shut up about it. There's enough evidence to at least see the Queen of England and her husband interviewed under caution. They took children away in 1964 in Kamloops. It was a Catholic school in Kamloops. And 10 children never returned. And Rayner, that isn't conspiracy theory. That is a fact, right? 10 kids disappeared and nobody was ever interviewed by the police, questioned, interviewed under caution. That royal family, those that were there, should have been interviewed by the police forces in that part of British Columbia. And that's a true story. You know this story, right?
I kind of heard about it. I don't know much about it. But I can say that British Columbia is a hotbed for Satanism. Alison Miller, who has written a great textbook that describes how everything operates. She's based in British Columbia in a place called Victoria, of all places. And she was just minding her own business as a clinical psychologist. Then within a short period of time, 4 people came forward with very similar stories. Then she realized that they are all connected to the same cult. She wrote about how the cult issues standard white vans with standard torture equipment. Sometimes they manage to get the police to stop those vans, and they wondered about why all these strange things are in there. And so British Columbia, I think, is a hotspot, has always been.
Just before we run out of time, 2 things. 10,000 children go missing from foster care every year in the UK. Do you believe some of these children come to a terrible end at some of these satanic ritual abuse parties?
Difficult. There are rumours along those lines. There is a life insurance apparently taken out on all those children in care. There was a horrific case reported on Researching Reform, Natasha's site, where a child with Down syndrome was taken into care and died in care in very suspicious circumstances. And when the parents complained, then all sorts of persecutions were perpetuated. And if I remember correctly, the 15-year-old son of the family was accused of sexual abuse, and with a bent solicitor who worked for the council, essentially, that young boy was taken into life imprisonment. So that's what happens if you speak out against injustice and similar things happened to the Norfolk Three, basically Marie and Joe. They complained about the abduction of their daughter Luna, and basically as a revenge, the council seemingly decided to pounce on them and pretend that they had abused their children. That's the case where Anthony Baker, the strange psychiatrist, was involved, who twice was hauled in front of the General Medical Council.
I have one final question. I'm going to ask you to be quick with this, though. You might laugh when I ask you this, because it's a strange time to throw this in. But I remembered that yesterday on bbc.co.uk, so on the BBC website, it was reported that very, very wealthy people in San Francisco are paying $8,000 to get blood transfusions from very, very young people as part of a way to rejuvenate themselves and to give themselves vitality. And this is really sinister and kind of strange and a bit uncomfortable. They're paying thousands to get blood from very young people. Some of our listeners would say that is related. If you connect the dots, that is related to satanic ritual events, procedures, and maybe even abuse. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds like what these kind of people are up to. Some people get several replacement hearts and make it beyond 100 years. San Francisco, of course, was the place of the Presidio scandal, where Lieutenant Aquino was accused of Satanism. That's the guy who is said to be linked to the death of Max Spears in Poland. Max Spears knew too much about Hempstead and some other stuff, looked into the Presidio stuff. Bohemian Grove is not far from San Francisco.
That's right.
Where there seems to be particular facilities where people are made to do things. They are being filmed, and then of course they are corrupted, and that's how the whole system has been working for decades.
Do us a favor, Rainer, remind us where people can find out more about you online and the workshops this coming weekend. Go ahead.
So my blog is called Psych Assessment Blog, and Psych Assessment, so that's on WordPress. I blog there every now and then. Then there are the URLs to Sandra Fecht's video. I also put on LinkedIn, actually, advert for the workshop. And I'll send you the flyer. Perhaps you can put it on your website.
Will do. We definitely will do, Rainer. I want to thank you for coming back on the program and for having the courage to talk about these things and do it publicly. It's not going to advance your career. You know that as well as I do, but you do it anyway. And I think we're forever indebted to you and Sandra and the others who talk about it. Really appreciate you coming back on the programme. It's been a while. Let's not leave it as long before you come back on again. Continued success to you, my friend, and to all those who work with you.
Okay, cheerio.
Thanks for that. The terrific Dr. Rainer Kurtz on the line to us there. From London. It's exactly 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour. More or less it for the programme, just enough time to remind you that Alison Shablo will return to the programme tomorrow. Alison has the dubious distinction, a terrific woman, I have a lot of time for Alison. She is the first person to be sued by the charity, the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. She was on the programme several months ago. We're going to catch up with Alison tomorrow to talk about that. And we're also going to talk tomorrow to a terrific journalist based in Cambodia called Morris. I was introduced to Morris by the brilliant Phil Restino, who's a great friend of this programme. Phil's a journalist and an army veteran based in Florida who's involved with veterans today. He's become a good friend of the programme. He's been very useful, has Phil, with great bits of information and recommendations. Thanks to Phil. So Morris joins us from Cambodia tomorrow. I have to pre-record that because of the time difference, but he's brilliant and you don't want to miss him. So I'm looking forward to that. Big shout out to Stephanie and Doyle. Really enjoyed speaking with Stephanie on the programme earlier on. I'm not patronising Stephanie. I think it's marvellous when people have the courage to speak about their experiences in a way that maybe enlightens people like me, who really didn't have any idea, wouldn't have any idea what people go through when they are coming to terms with gender dysphoria or body dysmorphia. I thought she was absolutely brilliant. I want to give a big shout out to Rachel May, by the way. Rachel is in... are you in Massachusetts, Rachel, or is it Chicago? I can't remember. We connected on Facebook anyway. Rachel has begun listening to the programme. She's actually in Wisconsin. She's in Wisconsin, is Rachel. Began listening to the programme recently and has become a big champion of the programme and spends a lot of time introducing other people to it. That's Rachel May in Wisconsin. Rachel, thanks for listening to the programme and thanks very much for sharing it with other people. So that's pretty much it for your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com this Wednesday. Thanks for listening to it. Big thanks to Dr. Rainer Kurtz and, as I said, Stephanie Ann Doyle. The programme is edited for YouTube by the brilliant Simon Stewart. Big shout out to Simon. And the website is run by my great friend and colleague. Also, Simon is a great friend and colleague. Aaron Calland as well. But the show is produced, edited and introduced by me, Richie Allen. Stay in touch with davidike.com/headlines and do listen to fabradiointernational.com as well. Going to leave you with some Beach Boys and say that I look forward to your company tomorrow at 7 p.m. British summertime. So in the meantime, look after yourselves and one another. Take care. See you tomorrow. Bye now.
Love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. Show nothing to me, so what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.